Accession number 27185, Reel 8.
Major Barras, Reel 8. I think you were saying that the troops were lively enough to exchange banter with the WVS ladies.
Oh, yes, yes. They were giving each other as good as they got, I remember. It was quite a cheerful scene, actually.
Had you had anything else, you know, up to that point? Anything,
no.
No food or drink after getting off?
Not that I remember. Well, I don't remember, no. Mm. I would have done, I think, because it's the sort of thing which you do if you put something in your mouth and so forth, something you remember, I think. I don't think I got anything else, no.
Do you remember what the station was, this main
station?
No, I
don't. No, I don't. I can just see it all, but... don't know where it was. It may have happened more than once, actually, because in the usual sort of way of things with troop trains, we did a complete safari around southern England and finished up in Weymouth.
Have you any idea of how long the journey took?
No, I have no idea at all. I mean, the whole thing was... I mean, it was brilliantly organised. I mean, when you think there were over 330... troops all arrived in 9 days, which was the period of the evacuation, at these ports in southern England, being dispersed at short notice by trains all over the countryside. We didn't hang around anywhere. And as I say, I eventually finished up in Weymouth, in the Verne Citadel barracks there. The first thing I remember, I do remember vaguely the sort of room my bed was in, but my first recollection of Weymouth was the next morning, down in the town, because we had to wait whilst the powers that be found out where our various units were before sending us off, so we had to wait for that. So another sort of Dunkirk evacuee and myself went down the town, and I just see myself flicking around one of those mobile things with postcards on, you know, those naughty seaside postcards with dreadful men with red noses and dreadful jokes. I can remember doing that, and everything seemed absolutely normal. It was a lovely sunny day, it was warm, there were crowds on holiday walking around in their holiday gear, families. It was so unreal. I mean, there we were here, just across the channel. There were hordes, huge crowds of people in the rows looking for safety. And here we were carrying on as if nothing was happening. I don't think, you know, the whole situation sunk in, really. I don't think they knew properly what was happening. I don't know what the papers had at that time or how the announcements were made. I'm sure it was leaked in such a way as not to cause too much alarm. But there was no whole... I mean, once the whole thing was over, there was no question that it wasn't all... The nation didn't know. And as Churchill said, you don't win wars by retreating, as he said in the House of Commons.
Do you remember anything about the other officer who went with you on that walk into town?
No, I just know I was with another guy. I don't know who he was or where he came from. I just remember the two of us flipping these things around. I don't suppose we even read the jokes, actually. I mean, we even had some sleep that night, but it still wasn't enough. We still had sort of weeks of sleep to make up, really.
Do you have any idea of how long it did take you to get back to normal by making up that sleep after that?
I suppose by the time I left there, I was fairly... back. But I have a letter which was dated the 6th of June from there to my family, my mother and father. So I was still there on the 6th of June. Mm-hmm. So I must have recuperated by then, I should think.
But would this be a matter of days or weeks before you were back to normal? Do you think?
I don't know. I would think days. I don't think it took weeks. I mean, we were young and fit.
So a few good nights' sleep would repair the damage.
Well, it should have done, I would think, yes. But I remember going home, because when they eventually found where my battalion was, they sent me up to Cheshire, Tattenham Park, I think it was. And I reported to a friend of mine there, Lieutenant, as he was, David Longprice, who was in a marquee tent, I remember, sitting behind a desk, checking people in. Now, what had happened was that although the battalion had gone aboard HMS Whitehall, I think it was, they went in, destroyer, off the mole, they got the other side to Dover, and they just got split up. Having men together, they got split up all over the countryside.
Put on different trains.
Different trains, yeah. Which is understandable. I mean, people didn't stand on ceremonies, places, anything. Anybody who came along, they put them in a train, and that was it, and the train went if it was full. If half the battalion was left behind, bad luck. So they got split up. So the assembly reporting place was here in Tattenham Park. And then I was sent off on 48 hours, what was called disembarkation leave, which showed that the War Office had a sense of humour after all. So I went home, got a train all the way down to South again, where my mother and father were living in Berkshire at that time, and had 48 hours leave.
Had they had any idea of what was going on across the Channel?
Oh, I think they did, yes, by then. Because I didn't get back to them till... Well, I was still in Weymouth on the 6th of June. The evacuation finished on the 4th. And by the time I got up to Cheshire and back again, it must have been getting on for probably the middle of June, because I don't know how long I was in Weymouth after the 6th.
What did you do day-to-day when you were in Weymouth before?
I haven't the faintest idea. I'm sure I did more than look at dirty postcards, but... I really can't remember. I think we didn't have anything to do, actually. Nobody tried to put us on parade or anything.
There was a question of sleeping and feeding.
There was feeding, yes, and there was probably a roll call every day, or they got us together and told us what the latest situation was regarding finding people's units. But this was going on all over the UK. Their pit troops have been sent, and of course we've got to remember about 100,000 of them were Allied soldiers. They weren't just British.
Do you remember seeing any Allied soldiers in the Citadel at Weymouth?
No. I don't remember seeing. I know a lot of them there, but I just don't remember. I don't remember the place. I just have this one small picture in my mind of the bed, and I suppose that remains there as the most important thing in my life then.
The main focus of the rest of the time. So what had you been able to get in touch with your parents before you went home on leave to let them know that you were all right?
Yes, that's one thing these ladies did. They gave us the usual printed cards, you know, the ones which the armed services have, where you strike out.
Field postcards.
That's right, yes. Saying, I'm well, I'm not well, I haven't heard from you for some time, and so forth. And you cross out what's not applicable. In this case, there wasn't anything on it to say I'd arrived safely from Dunkirk in print. So we had to make it up ourselves. And that went off that day to my people, so they would have known within a day or so that I got back safely, yeah. And I wrote to them from the Citadel, of course, because I've still got this letter dated the 6th.
So you had 48 hours at home, and then did you go back to Tattenham after?
No, we went back to a place called Keel Hall.
Where was that?
Wish I could remember. Oh, it was near Ashton-under-Lyme.
So Staffordshire then?
Yes, that's right, yes. Where the battalion was assembling. And that is the first time that I got to hear as to what happened to them after they disappeared.
What had happened?
Well, I don't remember anybody saying that how it was that a company went off without its company commander and the only other officer. I don't know. But what happened was that they went off the mole, and they said that the whole thing was well organized. They had a serial number for calling forward down the mole, and when they were called forward, they formed up as a battalion, and they ran down the mole, or doubled, I would say ran, they doubled down the mole, onto HMS Whitehall.
And that took them across?
That took them across. I believe they did get attacked on the way. Mm-hmm. I seem to remember them saying that. And then, of course, they got cut up, the battalion got cut up into various trains when they got to Dover.
But they eventually got together at...
They eventually all got together at Keele Hall, yeah. But this is, if I may just divert a little, this is the first time I ever heard of the mole. Nobody mentioned it on the beach. And I don't believe it's come up very much on the television programs they're doing. It's hardly ever mentioned. We've got this myth that they were all taken off the beaches. And even such a respected historian, war historian as Sir John Keegan, I remember him writing in an annex to the Telegraph for Children about history. And he just said, Dunkirk, this is where British soldiers were taken off the beaches in the little boats and left it at that. So little research has been done. I think this sort of, it's what I call lazy journalism. They've all assumed. In fact, all the fighting troops, as far as I can make out, were taken off the mole. It was, for some reason or other, it was left by the Luftwaffe. They'd destroyed the harbour, but they'd left the mole, and they hadn't somehow twigged that destroyers and other Allied ships were getting alongside there and embarking whole battalions at a time and moving off home. And of course they were doing it much quicker than anything off the beaches.
Do you remember seeing on or off the beaches these breakwaters of trucks that have been driven into the sea?
No, I don't. No.
Because I think that some people say there was an attempt to create artificial moles, as it were, off the beaches by driving trucks into the sea and laying planks over the top of them.
Oh, I know.
Provide some sort.
That's
of
the first time I've heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah. No. I don't remember seeing. No.
I mean, did you find that when you got home, your parents had a fairly accurate and comprehensive idea of what had been going on, or?
I don't think so. I don't remember actually. Mm. I imagine that they had an overall picture of what had happened. I mean, they must have known that we were withdrawing. I imagine it must have been an anxious time for all parents at that time, and wives and families and so forth. Mm.
Did you go back to the same company when you rejoined the battalion? Were you given another?
No, as far as I can remember, I went back to the same battalion, but we weren't long at Keele Hall.
I mean, was the battalion reasonably intact, or had it suffered a lot of casualties?
We didn't suffer a lot of casualties, no. I can't remember how many, but I'd be surprised if it was more than 50 at the outside. And that includes people who fell by the wayside and were taken prisoner, you know.
It's a very small proportion.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We must have confronted the enemy on more occasions than I can remember, because there were a number of awards afterwards. I know there was Tony Omen got his MC. There was a DCM which the RSM got. There were three MMs. And a whole clutch of mention and dispatches. So, you know, old men do forget, I'm afraid. But I don't know. I think one tends to, I tend to forget the worst bits. I don't have nightmares and that sort of thing, fortunately.
So you went back, and from Keele Hall, where did they go next?
Well, we then went down to Hereford, to a place called Knighton. K is spelt with a K. I think it's Knighton. It was a small village. We were under canvas there. And we were then still in 25 Brigade. We were now in 47 Division, the old 2nd London Division, which had Bow Bells on us as a divisional sign on our sleeves, I remember. And there we just involved ourselves in the most rigorous training. And with the Hereford Hills, and we're right on the borders with Wales, so we were going up and down these hills doing basic training, platoon training, company training, battalion training, and then there was formation training as well. We were really getting ourselves ready for the expected invasion.
Was this training the same sort of thing as you'd been doing before you went to France, or had it changed?
Oh, no, it changed totally. I mean, it was much more intensive. There was much more awareness of the threat of the air. There was much more awareness of armour divisions, panzers, and what the tank could do. And we needed to be fit. We were pretty fit when we got back from Dunkirk. I mean, we must have been, otherwise we wouldn't have got there. But they wanted to keep us fit and alert, and the whole idea was really to get the battalions and brigades moving and acting as a credible force. It's a question of the officers taking the command and sorting out tactical situations, which we hadn't done for a long time.
How did the awareness of the importance of air power and the importance of armour affect what you were doing in this training? What were the tactical changes?
Well, the only thing I can remember is the slit trench came into its own. What we dug whilst we were retreating, I don't know. We couldn't have dug a lot very deep, because a lot of the places we were hardly there any length of time. But the slit trench came into its own. There were two-man slit trench, which was about 4.5 foot deep, I think, and about 4 foot in length and 2.5 foot wide, if that. And that became sort of standard for the rest of the war. I remember we still doing that in Normandy. I don't know. I suppose the higher people higher up must have been thinking of tank design. And also more powerful anti-tank guns, because the 2-pounders which we had were pop guns, were absolutely useless. The boys' anti-tank rifle was replaced at some stage, not this point earlier, but later on by the Piat, which was more of an ambush weapon than a long-distance weapon. But other than that, I can't remember. I just remember all this climbing of hills and digging in. And we did a lot of mobile stuff as well, because 47 Division eventually was designated as a mobile column. I mean, that's why we were stationed in Hereford, I assume. Because our job would have been to go out and either round up or try and hold down parachuters that had dropped anywhere. Or, of course, go further south if an invasion did take place, and if there were inroads into the defences down there, then we'd serve as a sort of backup.
So you'd be a mobile reserve for counterattack?
We were totally mobile. We weren't mobile until one morning I remember waking up and finding a whole lot of red buses with silver tops all parked, single deckers, all parked under the trees round the fields. And they middle and red buses they were from Birmingham.
And they were your tactical transport?
And they were of transport, but I think a couple of days later they'd all disappeared under camouflage paint. So that was what we used for until the proper carriers, troop carriers came out. But I don't think the troop carriers were available at that stage in any numbers until well into the next year.
Do you remember if you had any scares about parachutists while you were at Hereford? Did Did you have to go out looking for alleged
parachutist? I don't remember it. No. It was after we'd been there for a bit. I was sent for by the CO, who was Blessed. Henry Blessed was back then, and he said, "Can you ride a motorcycle?" So I said no. So he said, "Good, you can form a motorcycle platoon," which was, you know, it was the greatest fun. Remembering I was still only 20, and this turned out to be the idea of this motorcycle platoon was to go out in front, head of the battalion, and try and pinpoint any parachutists that had landed. We wouldn't be expected to mop them up because we were only about 25 to 30 strong, actually, but to pinpoint them and keep them in view, and if possible hold them up and signal back to the battalion exactly what was happening.
So you were motorcycle reconnaissance?
We were motorcycle reconnaissance, yes.
What kind of machines did they give you?
Well, somebody must have gone out and commandeered a whole lot of civilian bicycles. So we had a whole stack of different types of bicycles, and from rallies to Nortons and anything you could think of, which would make any sort of collector's mouth water these days. If I'd had that lot now, I'd be a millionaire. The only person who had a decent bicycle, well, a war department bicycle, was myself. I had a BSA 500cc, I remember. And then we had to find out who could ride bicycles, motorcycles. So a note was sent round the battalion and volunteers came forward. Some, most of them had, some hadn't and volunteered. We needed NCOs, of course. So eventually we found, I think it was, must have been about 25. There was a sergeant, three corporals, and the rest were privates. And we had these motorcycles, which was for one person. Then we had three combinations. Not the type you wear, I mean the type with the
sidecar,
yes, which we mounted a Bren gun. And that took two people. And first of all, we had to learn to ride.
How did you go about doing that?
Well, we went off every morning up in the hills, tried to keep off the roads as much as possible. I don't know whether we had licenses or what. But all these different types of bicycles we used to go off, and of course we were completely amateur with them to start with. I'd never ridden one before. And we used to go around these, I suppose we started off on the flat and then we did the hills. And the first few days we came back pushing our bikes with burnt out clutches. Mm-hmm. And we had a marvellous Remy section there, headed by one Staff Sergeant Brigham, I remember. And every time we came back pushing these bikes, not everybody was pushing them, but there were a fair proportion of them, he'd stand there, so they all come out of their tents, he and his technicians, his fitters, and watch us come back, you know, with sort of, I don't know, sadness on his face, because they had to stay up all night fixing these bikes. Where he got the spares from all these types of bicycles, I don't know. But by the next morning, they were all back on the road again.
Did you fall off a lot while you were learning how to ride?
We probably did. I don't remember. Mm. But one thing I do remember is old Brigham, Staff Sergeant Brigham, became known as Clutch Brigham as a result of this. And I'm quite sure, knowing how nicknames stay, for the rest of his days he was known as Clutch. Mm. Even by people who hadn't the faintest idea why he was called Clutch, we called him Clutch. Anyway, eventually we got more proficient. So then we had to work out how we would move on the roads, what tactics we would assume. And this was the greatest fun, because I was left entirely on my own. Nobody had ever had a motorcycle platoon before.
Was there no pamphlet?
No, there was no pamphlet about motorcycle platoons. Nobody had ever heard of them before. I assumed that the other battalions all had one as well. And I don't remember any interchanging of ideas or... I just was sent off on my own to work it all out.
Do you have any idea of how long it took you to become reasonably proficient in controlling the machine?
We had to move pretty quickly because we assumed that the Germans were going to mount an invasion. Of course, the Battle of Britain was beginning to start at this time. down in the south. So we were under pressure. So we were out all day, every day. So I imagine it wasn't too long. I mean, we were all, as I say, fit and well and young and enthusiastic, I will say. So it wasn't long before we could ride the bikes proficiently. And then it was a question of working out. I divided them up into three sections, I remember. We had a motorcycle combination in each section, and then probably about five or six motorcyclists in each.
What about your platoon headquarters?
I had a sergeant, yes. Sergeant Crossley, I remember, who became provost sergeant later. I had a wireless operator, and I would have had an orderly of some sort, and that's about it, I think. There wasn't any need for anybody else.
Were there any wireless sets down at section level, or did you have the
no,
own line up to level?
No. We were quite close. I mean, they didn't go off on their own.
What sort of wireless set was it? Do you remember?
I can't remember. It must have. I don't know whether we had 19s by then.
Presumably it was a man pack set.
Not 19s, I mean 18. Yes. 19 was the big one, which went to brigade. 18, it would have been a pack. I think probably we might have had an 18, but certainly had a fair range because they had to get back to battalion on the battalion net.
Mm. Did it work well generally?
As far as I can remember, yes, I don't think we had any troubles. One of the most amusing episode I can remember is we were going down a road and just ahead of me was a combination with Corporal Gardner, I remember, who was driving, very competent, steady NCO, one of the old regulars. And he had this guy in the sidecar, a ginger hair, I can see him this day. And we approached a Y junction, one road going off one way, another one going off another. And for some reason or other, nobody would believe it if they hadn't seen it, I saw it, the sidecar became detached and went down one way, and so Corporal Gardner went down the other. And I can still see this combination careering from side to side with this guy's helmet had blown off by now. He hadn't got any helmet on or a soft hat or whatever he was wearing. This ginger-haired private soldier looking around all over the place wondering what the hell was going on and finishing up in the ditch upside down with a sort of wheel turning slowly in the air. You wouldn't believe it if you hadn't seen it, but it just happened at that very time.
You said that you had to devise techniques for road movement.
Yes.
How did you arrange that?
Well, we had to move in sections.
Yes.
In single file. That was really all there was to it, with gaps between sections. There wasn't an awful lot of traffic on the road in those days.
Was this a sort of anti-air drill, or was it just...
it was both. Yeah. It was the convenience of traffic on the roads.
What sort of speeds would you normally... aim to?
Well, in normal circumstances, we wouldn't be going too fast. Mm. About 25 to 30 miles an hour, I imagine. There wasn't any sort of ton-ups or any of that going on.
Cross-country?
Have done a lot bits faster. Mm. In fact, the international cross-country course was there in Wales, and whilst we were still learning cross country, we went round this, which was pretty hairy in places.
And you said that you had to devise tactics for using them. What sort of tactics did you
use? Well, it was a question of normally I sent the combination up front with probably a couple of cyclists going ahead of them. So they got the Bren gun as a sort of cover. Because otherwise the soldiers had their rifles slung across their back, so they weren't easily accessible. But with the Bren gun there already in the sidecar, it was ready to fire. And then if we approached and found the enemy, then we'd deploy. We'd have to get off our bikes and leave them behind and get up and get on our flat feet, as you always have to do in the end in the infantry.
Just dismount it.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you have anyone playing the part of enemy for you on tactical schemes?
I don't remember. We did take part in some schemes, so therefore we must have had enemy there. Not for our singular purpose, but for the purpose of the battalion or formations taking part in the exercise.
When the